Fuck.
Please note that the following program includes adult themes and language. You're listening to the weekly show on Discourse.
Yeah, I'm back.
I'm Ben Gracewood, no longer gardening.
I'm Morgan Nicol, big mouth dickhead from the internet.
I'm Robin Gallagher, and I know what you did.
Robin, did you invent the Gallagher Index?
The what?
The Gallagher or Gallagher Index.
I don't know what that is.
It's a number that represents the proportionality of representation in comparison to the way the votes were cast in an election.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I actually have a different name for that. I call that Doug. But, yeah, I invented that.
And you call it Doug.
Yep. So, yeah. I guess it's a nickname, I suppose. In a formal situation, I would say the Gallagher Index, but I wouldn't say, you know, just around the lab, I'd go, oh, yeah, how's the latest Doug? And people would go, excellent. Oh, yeah, it's quite good, yeah.
Okay, maybe we should come back to that.
I'm interested to discover what happens if I just don't talk for an episode.
Do you realize how it would just be the best episode ever?
It would get
so many new subscribers.
All right, let's find out.
Then there'll be one person who writes in, oh, I miss Morgan's shiny bald head.
What have you been doing this week, Robin? Anything big?
You know what? I've been seeing lots and lots of films. I'm one of the judges in the Wellington 48 Hours competition. So I've attended all the heats, and I've seen over 160 films.
Wow.
It's pretty hard going because a lot of them aren't awesome.
I really want to talk. This is very hard for me. I haven't seen 100 and how many did you say, 170? I've seen maybe 40. And God, every single one a gem except for maybe 37 of them, which were stinkers.
Oh, dear.
The ratio of...
What the hell just happened?
We were asking you,
oh, yeah,
in Auckland, what the ratio of craptacular to good shows was, good shorts were.
I kind of messed up what I was saying before, so I could just start by saying, in the Wellington heats, there were probably only one or two really good films per heat. In fact, some heats had some quite bad films, but I don't know.
I think you're exaggerating. I don't believe you. I don't believe there was one really good film in an average heat. I believe there was probably one okay film in an average heat.
Okay, yeah, I would say that actually. There was probably one. I mean, there were some heats that didn't have any good films in them.
Yeah.
Although a lot of that was to do with just the way that the heats are structured for school teams and stuff. I'm sort of saying that all school teams are crap. But not quite. But, yeah, there were sometimes you just go for crap films, crap films, crap films, and then suddenly this bright and shining diamond of a really good film comes along, and it's like, wow.
It's must a make relief, him judging though. Easier, though, because you quickly say, these are the six that are okay.
Easier and harder, because there are some that really stand out, and you just think, well, they're definitely going to be in the finals. But then it's like, well, okay, so what's the rest of it going to be? We've got a big judging session on Sunday, so that's going to be when we decide who the finalists are going to be. So...
Can you talk at all about your criteria, or is it so obvious that there's little point? Is it like, is the film good? Okay, well, it's a good film.
There is actually, it's always been a bit,
like
nothing's really been concrete, more that you know it when you see it. But there has been this year a sort of a formalized criteria.
Yeah.
And I don't think this is anything... I'll read it out.
Yeah.
So you look at the overall achievement of the short. Is it original? How close to its genre does it stick? Does it reinvent its genre in an original way? What sets this apart from the others? Would it stand up outside of the competition? Do the random elements fit in smoothly or stand out like a sore thumb? Is the dialogue clunky or smooth? Are the characters defined or just ciphers? Is production values an innovation, sound, music, and image? And just with the overall, there's also kind of just a 48 hours defining criteria that it is a genre competition.
Yep.
And it's, so, you know, there is a certain kind of a 48 hours film, which I think your team made, Morgan.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell me what you mean by that.
It's kind of, you know, sort of films that will make that will entertain the audience.
Yep. A little bit, what, shock value, avant-garde
sort of thing. I mean, not looking for a sort of a self-indulgent art wank kind of film.
Yeah.
But just something that, you know, just that really awesome cinematic experience.
Man, I'm so fucking, it's so nice of you to say that about my film, that you think it kind of meets some of the, you know, some of that criteria.
I think the key scene in the first part of it is something that really gets that 48 hours spirit.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I hope that the Auckland judges see it the same way. In the 48 hours forums, which our listeners can go to, v48hours.co.nz, and just go into the forums. It might even be /forums. Who can say? I'm not going to look it up. You'll see that you know, some of the various punters who've been to a bunch of the heats and have you know, reviewed lots of the shorts. Like, there are people who went to every short in Auckland but who aren't judges.
It's fun. I did that. James and I did
That's
that.
That's the best part of 300 shorts.
It's quite a lot. It's only 160 or so in Wellington.
Right. I think there's 270 in Auckland this year. Oh, maybe it's
200. Kind of... God, you know how you say it's boring when I talk about gadgets?
Well, let me finish getting to my point.
Jesus.
Let me finish getting to my point, Ben. I would say I'd cut you off, but you're hosting this call. my short is not on anyone's list of likely Auckland finals shorts. And I can understand that because they found it shocking. And I think people probably, I'm not going to give anyone any spoilers, but I'll put my short up on Vimeo for people to see once the finals are announced. I think people want films that made them laugh in the finals. And that doesn't mean, and my short actually is kind of funny in parts, but...
There were parts where I giggled.
Right.
I giggled so much.
What was your heat, Morgan?
My heat, I think, I was at 6 p.m. on Friday, which was heat 10, and then I was shifted to 9:30 p.m. because there were school teams in my heat. And I'm not going to say what happens in my short, but it is my genre was revenge, and there is a subgenre, a popular type of revenge movie. And I went for it, balls to the wall. And yeah, there are problems with my short though. There are problems. There's meant to be a second act, which is very specifically defined in my subgenre. And there was just no time. I mean, I'm talking about the way that it's normally structured in feature film length anyway, and this is a short film, five minutes, 30 seconds.
That's the thing, you are making a short film, and if you try and cram in a feature film, it can just end up feeling like a bit manic.
Yep.
Or glossing over stuff that needs to be looked at in more detail.
Yeah. So I'm so much happier this year than I was last year. So much happier. Last year it was a little bit of a confusing short. I'd like to re-edit my last year's one and see if I can make it more like what I was imagining when I wrote it. But I don't know. I'm not sure if it's possible. I think it's just going to be an incomprehensible one no matter what happens.
Yeah, I was looking at the audience votes. Forum post, and I can't see you there anywhere. But
oh no, I didn't win my audience favourite, but that's completely unrelated to everything we've been talking about.
Oh, good. I have no idea.
You've never been to a heat or anything, have you?
No.
No. Right.
No. I was just looking, you know, to see how badly you'd done.
Better than your short, Ben. Asshole.
Definitely. Definitely. Better than anything I've ever done in film.
So you couldn't come along, even though I, for whatever reason, fucking glutton for punishment I am, I asked you to come along and join the team. And for some reason, you couldn't do that, Ben. Why was that?
Because I went to Japan.
Why would you go to Japan? Did you come back all radioactive? Are you glowing in the dark? Have you got three heads? Have
I had
you got
about
four
three
arms?
People say that out of about 20 who said, oh my God, that's awesome.
You're mad.
And
don't it's drink silly. The water, Ben.
There's nothing wrong with it. Tokyo is perfectly fine. Tokyo's levels of radiation are lower than Hong Kong and New York at the moment.
All right, and what about Auckland?
Well, probably not. We don't have many radioactive things.
No, we don't.
But Japan. I thought it was interesting to talk about Japan because you went before the earthquake.
Yep.
Robin went during the earthquake.
Yep.
Yes.
Was there during the earthquake, actually when it happened, and we went mm-hmm. after the earthquake.
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah, that bullet train's good fun, eh, Ben?
Didn't get to go on it.
Oh, no,
Ben. Neither did I because the bullet trains weren't running after
oh,
the earthquake.
Oh, no.
They were certainly running. Guys. I saw them driving around. They're pretty awesome looking things, aren't they? I saw an interesting article in the Japan, one of the English Japan papers, about how they were trying to re-engineer the nose of the bullet train so they could go faster into the tunnels.
Right.
The main complaint is the noise that they make when they go into the tunnels.
Right. The nose of those trains is already just absolutely astonishing.
The freaky duck, the new freaky duck bill one, is great.
So they are amazing. It is probably my favorite form of transport.
So great. There's so many great things.
That's right. There are so many great things about Japan, but not the racism. I don't like the racism there.
I didn't detect any racism.
Nope. That's because they keep it secret.
It's quite freaky. Like, if you're a tourist, this is what I've heard. If you're a tourist, they'll basically leave you alone because you're a tourist. But the more you get involved in Japanese society, like if you learn the language and if you're working there, then you just start finding these little subtle things. One of the friends I visited in Japan, he's an English man married to a Japanese woman, and they've actually just moved to Hamburg because despite living in Japan for, I think, you know, maybe about 5 or 6 years, he's just got to the point where he knows he'll never be accepted.
Yeah.
Always Gaijin.
There's this ridiculous, like he can't even though he's married to a woman and a Japanese woman and lived there for years, he can't become a Japanese citizen because, well, he could, but there are things like you have to learn, you have to have virtually perfect Japanese, and you know he can speak really good Japanese, but he doesn't know business Japanese, which is this complicated extra type. So he just went fuck yous and buggered off to Germany so he can be awesome.
This puts an interesting angle on it, eh?
And the difficulty that non-Japanese find in getting even rental accommodation, sometimes getting jobs. Speaking with someone that we met and had a few drinks and meals with in Japan, who's lived there for 12 or 15 years. And it's hard for him to get accommodation. And he said that white people are basically, the Japanese will think that you're probably trying to rob them. Yeah, which is absolutely, for me, it seems bizarre, but is that different from the way that, you know, other people in any country in New Zealand feel about other immigrants?
This is true.
I was just reading a book. My dad gave me this book that he bought in the 60s about Japan, and they mentioned that traditionally Japan has been a very insular culture. Like, they actively kept out visitors from mainland Asia, and ships would visit from people who were like, we are going to come and trade with you and open up your country to the world. And there'd be this mass slaughter of, you know, like, get out, you're not welcome here. And it's only been in the last couple of hundred years, I think, that foreigners have been sort of allowed to enter Japan.
Sorry, I went over here and started reading about V48 hours stuff again. But I do not want to. I do not want to sidetrack. I'm sorry. Let's get this
There's
back
some
on
cool
track.
Things though. Well, there's many cool things about Japan.
I want to
talk about those.
Let's talk about those. But first, let's talk about how successful it was for you being out at Disney.
It was fantastic. Like, we tried hard to find somewhere in the town in the city.
Mm.
But at such short notice, like, we basically had a week to book our hotel. And at the same price, the Sheraton Disney was just stupidly cheap.
Yeah.
$200 a night, for a Sheraton. Yeah. Crazy cheap. Mm. Because there was no one there.
Yeah.
The place was completely deserted.
Oh, so
amazing.
Were there stuff all queues at Disney?
There were no queues.
Oh!
There were the worst queue, you know, for the big rides might have been 20 minutes, if that.
The worst we had was probably over an hour.
Yeah, no queues. And the point, the Sheraton had like four restaurants. They closed two of them down because there was no one in the hotel, and you would be surprised to see someone getting in the lift with you.
Right.
Really quite crazy. And so things like the monorail, the Disney monorail, was completely empty, and you know, you just rock on and off it whenever you wanted to. And yeah, but it was kind of like, it's like you know, the Norwegian sauna where you sit in the snow, then you jump in the spa pool.
Yeah,
it was like that. So staying out at Disney was so weirdly Japanese. You know, it was it's Disney, Japanese? But it's Japanese Disney.
Is it Japanese?
So, well, yeah, when you jumped on the bus from the monorail to the hotel, Mickey Mouse would come on in Japanese to say something,
yeah.
Something along the lines of, you know, "Hey kids, take a seat. We're going to move now."
Oh, did you do the Star Tours trip? The Star Tours ride?
No,
because the droids talk Japanese, so it's like it's like Japanese C-3PO. It's like, oh yeah, my god, this is so
it's
fun.
It's a small world in Japanese, and yeah. and you know, you must have seen the Disney parades through this.
Oh thing. No, we dodged the parades and we went straight to rides, because during the parades there was no queues.
We watched one of the parades because, you know, there was Mickey Mouse, and that's the funny other thing is we thought the 2-year-old would get nothing out of the trip at all, but she was just mouse everything, mouse train, cool. Mouse bus, mouse.
Did you get
everything.
Her some ears?
Fantastic. What's that?
Did you get her some ears?
Yes, we got her mouse ears, and cool. She wore them the whole time. And but yeah, so the parade was just over the top, weird mix of cosplay / you know, zany Japanese weirdness. People dressed up as eggs because it was the Easter special. Yeah. Anyway, weird.
Yeah.
But the whole sauna thing, snow to spa, was then you catch the train,
yeah,
and go into the city, which was, you know, totally Japanese.
Yeah.
And then you come back out again to this Disney place that was just Japanese in a freaky way. Really, really interesting. It worked really well.
I have to ask you, did you go on the Pirates of the Caribbean ride?
No,
I did.
Okay. Can I ask you this more? Were the pirates speaking Japanese?
Yeah.
Because when I was in Euro Disneyland Paris, as they call it now.
I don't really remember the pirates talking.
The pirates spoke French, and it was the coolest thing. Yeah. Like, oh, yarr.
That would have been good.
I don't really. All I remember is humidity.
What you're doing at Tokyo Disney is going on the Pirates of the Caribbean.
Well,
ride.
It's a small world. Was in Japanese, so they must have all been in Japanese.
Yeah, I thought that my favorite rides at Tokyo Disney were Space Mountain and I think the other one's Thunder Mountain. Yeah, those two. The ones that were a complete waste of time were the Monsters, Inc. ride, Star Tours. Actually, just pretty much everything else was a waste of time, really.
We went to another place called Odaiba, which is where the Fuji TV building is with the big globe inside it.
Yeah.
That was quite interesting because there was a big mall there that had a shrine on the roof, and it was a view over Tokyo Bay.
Yeah.
And there's a... And the Rainbow Bridge.
Yeah.
And there's a Statue of Liberty there.
Right.
That's, yeah, cool. Very strange.
I want to talk about this because I saw this on your list, is money dishes.
Yeah.
Every shop should have a money dish. I don't know why shops don't have money dishes. It took me a day to get used to it. I kept on feeling like a dick because I put my money on the bench and then realized I had to pick it up and put it in the dish.
Yeah. So you should explain what a money dish is.
Oh, I'd forgotten about that.
Yeah, every shop has, beside their till, they have a little dish where you put your money in.
And then they give you a change and they put the change in the money dish.
Yeah.
I loved it because, yeah, it does. First of all, it solves the problem of what to do with the money, especially when maybe you've got the money out and you're just sort of mucking around.
You're trying to count it into something around. Yeah.
And it also, it's just kind of a bit neater and you don't have to, you know, hold out your hand and,
There's a tiny bit of formality. It's the same way they pass the, you know, pass a card back to you or something like that with two hands. It's just...
Yeah, like giving you the change with two hands. Or
it's a little bit of ceremony and I think it's lovely.
I suppose in New Zealand it wouldn't be as much fun because everyone uses the EFTPOS card.
Yeah, true.
The EFTPOS dish.
Exactly.
And when are they going to have... a consistent side for the mag stripe reader on all the friggin' terminals. Oh. What is so hard? I mean, it's like a 50 cent part. Why can't they just have two?
Can I tell you the hardest thing is being left-handed because I hold my card in my hand.
Because you die earlier, you sinister bastard.
I'm satanic. And the angle, it always covers the side that the strip illustration is on.
Yeah.
So I'll be swiping it going... why doesn't it say which way to do it? And then I'll look under my hand and there's the little diagram.
Why do they need a diagram, though? You're right, Morgan. Why can't I just put a mag stripe thing, you know, offset on either side?
Yep. Both sides. Assholes.
Because one side will get nothing.
Of course, that won't be solved. We'll just all move to like near field communications or something. We'll just go.
Only if it's as fast as Suica. Good God. Oh, it's that so stuff is awesome.
Now, how did you feel about that subway? Oh my God.
It just worked. And this, the thing that I keep saying is they've used Snapper, and Snapper is slow. It's so slow. And I don't know if it's because of our cell networks or what.
Yeah.
But Suica, which is the equivalent, we bleep in and bleep out of subway stations. It's so fast. It's even the ticket readers are fast.
And it's the same blooming technology. So why is it fast there and slow here?
I don't know.
Because we are somehow we are dickheads.
Well, maybe it's because they're on buses and they're not connected to wired. You know, there's not servers in the train station that are doing the.
The way that Snappers work is you do all your swiping, but at the end of the day, when the bus goes back to the terminal, they plug in a thing and download all the data from day.
If that's the case, then why does it take so long to hear your card? You have to hold your card there for a good 1 or 2 seconds before it'll work.
Yeah. Well, it used to be. When they first launched in Wellington, they were a little bit slower. And then they did this upgrade of some sort. But you know what? You should talk to some of the guys, one of the guys from Snapper, because they're very friendly and they like talking about technology.
Yeah, I do.
What's his name? Mickey Sicky Sai.
Really awesome.
Actually told me he wanted to talk.
We had like a little Wellingtonist talk. We went up to the Snapper HQ. And
HQ? Did you say HQ?
No, I said HQ. I'm not Australian.
You better say HSC.
We should talk to him because, maybe I'm out of date, but it was really slow when I used it. Maybe I'll get him buy a hop card and see how it works in Auckland.
Fucking hop.
Yeah, well, there you go. There's the technology.
Yeah. But the other thing about the whole Suica and stuff is just the semiotics, the inherent signalling that was all over the place. So, like, the little gates on the Suica barriers, so you knew you could go through or not, and the arrows everywhere. But the thing is, with we had baby in a stroller a lot of the time, so we're always looking for the elevators.
Yeah.
And I realized on the second day that a lot of the elevators in the subway stations are in transparent elevator shafts.
Yeah.
And it's not to make them look cool, it's so that wherever you, whatever angle you look at them from, you'll see there's an elevator in there.
Right.
So you don't need to look around for a sign that says elevator this way. You just glance around, you see the elevator moving or the doors are closing, and you go, there's an elevator. Tiny little bits of attention to detail. And the emergency exit signs are on the floor.
Yeah.
Because there's going to be fucking smoke everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, just more thought put into absolutely everything. But it's thought
my
that...
My father-in-law's a... he runs a... They do fire protection. The company does fire protection. So he was looking... He was, quite stunned by how well they do stuff.
Yeah.
Like smoke and fire baffles, automatic baffles everywhere. If you look around, you notice there's all these slots in the roof.
Yeah.
That all drop down smoke baffles about halfway down, or about a foot down from the roof. That'll stop the smoke spreading.
I wonder if your country is firebombed into the Stone Age
and has regular earthquakes, and
you have a new appreciation for fire, and if for part of your history you had paper and kindling houses. I think that we could learn a lot from Japan, and I think that our maybe not in terms of our power generation network, but in our public transport network, I think basically we should just copy whatever we can afford. I mean, we don't.
Yeah, it's hard, because 8.5 million people in that small space means there's so much opportunity. That's the other thing I was amazed by, is you could effectively build a shop selling anything you wanted anywhere, and there'd be enough traffic to support it.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? It's so different in that sense.
It's something interesting about Japanese culture is that they don't hang on to old stuff the way that we do.
Bash down old buildings.
They have museums and they appreciate old things, but there's definitely, as far as buildings go, there's that whole thing of temples that just get rebuilt every 50 years or so.
Yep.
So you can go, okay, there's been this temple here for 500 years, but the current temple building is maybe it was built in 1973.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there
is... In a similar style.
Yeah, or pretty much exactly the same, but maybe with some sprinklers. you don't get that sort of clinging on to old buildings and that thing that we get in New Zealand culture where you kind of have an old building and you replace all the rotten bits and make it look like it was still really old. you just pull it down and build a new building in Japan. And I think a lot of it has been because there's been just so much destruction, either through natural disasters or through war damage, that people just go, okay, we like new stuff. We're just going to embrace the new.
Which is cool in its own way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. On a vaguely related note, this reminded me of a sci-fi book I'm reading, which has a really interesting concept where you can put yourself into a what they call a bobble, which is just a stasis field where you stay the same. And so people will build houses out of stone and then put themselves in stasis for 1,000 years and come out again so that the stone's all nicely weathered.
Oh.
So they'll have a nice architectural ancient house.
That society wouldn't work at all. Your entire your community would disappear.
Yeah, that's the case. They do.
But you'd have a beautiful house.
They have to organise to meet at like 50-million-year intervals. Yeah. They do that.
I think I've read that.
Yeah, possibly. Verna Vinge, maybe?
Yeah.
Vinge?
Yeah, I've read that.
Yeah. It reminds me that it's the opposite of Aberdeen in Scotland, where there are a lot of buildings built from granite.
Mm.
And granite's really hard wearing. So you have these buildings that are hundreds of years old, but they don't look weathered. They look quite new. So it's like this old city with you know.
Yeah, shiny granite walls.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Feels quite cold.
And the last thing, I guess, on Japan that I noticed was that there's no tourists. The plane was completely empty and there's no tourists, no gaijin visiting. And it's sad because there's nothing wrong with anything other than about 100 k's around the where the tsunamis hit really badly.
I think discourse drinking game. Every time Ben says gaijin, drink, and you're going to have to backdate that, have like 7 already. Right, carry on.
Yeah.
I can give you a new word. It's flygin, and that refers to white people living in Tokyo who went home, but went back to their home countries after the earthquake.
Ah, good word.
They are I think they are assholes, aren't they?
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of them, you know, I met a guy from New York who's family was like going, you have to come home, we're so worried about you.
What was it like right around the time of the earthquake and the uncertainty and stuff? Because I mean, from here it seemed like the radiation was spreading everywhere.
Well, I was, my posse were cool, you know. I think I had friends there who could get.
What are you laughing about, Morgan?
Nothing, carry on as you were.
Morgan's naked. I had friends who could read the Japanese papers, or it was, you know, English language Japanese news, and they weren't freaking out. So I thought, okay, maybe there's nothing to freak out about. And I don't know, like I could sort of tell that there'd been a lot of disaster up north, but just looking around, all the sort of locals weren't freaking out. Shops were still open. I mean, the big department stores were closed, but a lot of that had to do with people couldn't get home on the day of the earthquake, so it's a bit unfair to expect them to go to work the next day, sort of thing.
Yeah. So the trains were up and running the next day and all that sort of stuff.
They were limited service, but it was still, still pretty frequent, like every 2 minutes instead of every 1 minute sort of thing.
Yeah. Oh,
most escalators outside of rush hour were closed, especially down escalators.
Did you ever encounter any of the automatic escalators?
Yes.
You walk up to them and they start.
That is so brilliant. Yep.
Yeah. Actually, I said yes, but the one I encountered was in Brisbane, not in Japan. But I was like, why are we walking over there? The escalator's turned off and then it started moving.
So good.
Interesting.
And or they could just have stairs.
Half the lights were turned off, so they'd taken the bulbs out of all the fluoro tubes.
Mm. What were the what was Shibuya Crossing like?
I went there during the day, but all the videos were playing. The sound was playing.
Isn't it wonderful?
Most of that was turned off after the earthquake.
Okay.
It's kind of difficult. Like, there's so much stuff. It's like, okay, we have to conserve energy, but yet the heated toilet seats are still on.
Yeah. So apparently Ben, everyone's turned them off.
Did you think it seemed a little bit smaller than you expected, the crossing?
Definitely. Absolutely. We came out the Hachiko exit and I was like, hey, okay, where's the crossing? And I looked up and realized I was there.
Yeah.
And it made sense. Like, obviously, you know, all those tourist photos are done on on scaffolds or cherry pickers or something to make things look bigger.
Or from the Starbucks.
Yeah. but when I realized how small it was, And then especially walking up the alleyways or the, you know, smaller streets around it, it made a lot of sense. Especially then the next stop, we got, so we walked around, we had lunch, we had a, went to a conveyor sushi restaurant, which was good fun, and went back on the Yanomote to Tokyo Station and then walked out through this, the whole financial district there, and that's totally different.
Yeah.
Did you go through that area, the Imperial Palace area and stuff?
Yeah.
I didn't.
Really, really wide open and kind of...
You mean the Imperial Palace with the big moat?
Yeah, gigantic
yeah,
moat.
Yeah, we our hotel was very close to there.
Yeah. And the area, you know, Tiffany Jewelers and, you know, all the incredibly posh shops and restaurants.
Also all the museums and art galleries.
Yeah, and boulevardy, like treed boulevards and stuff, which Shibuya completely wasn't.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad we saw that contrast, because you think of Tokyo, you think of Akihabara and Shibuya. But downtown Tokyo is completely different. Yeah.
Did you get any souvenirs?
No, I was tempted by a replica statue of this guy. God, I can't remember his name. The statue in the park across the road from the Imperial Palace. Did you see that one, Morgan?
No.
Samurai on his horse.
Yeah.
Oh, I saw a photo of that.
Awesome statue. It's incredibly dynamic.
I may have seen that. Is it on your Flickr or something?
Yeah. Have a look on the Flickr. I'll put it in the show notes. But very, very cool statue. Yeah. You can have a look now if you want.
So for listeners who might be listening, and just say that in a few months' time, or maybe when the weather's nice and temperate and not hot or cold, just say that a listener is going, Air New Zealand's having a cheap grab a seat to Japan. I might go there for a week. What would you recommend that people do if they're going to be spending like 5 days in Tokyo?
In Tokyo? I'd say Tokyo Disney if you've never been to Disneyland. Shibuya, Akihabara and Tokyo stations. And all you have to do is leave those stations and walk around, you know, within 3 or 4 blocks of the station. But you need to walk the right way, because the first time I went to Akihabara, I stopped on the way to, I jumped down on the way to Ueno Park, everyone else was going to the zoo, and I stopped and got out. But I didn't have a map, and I went out the wrong exit and thought, this place is kind of, you know, interesting. It's a little suburb and tiny alleyways and stuff, but I couldn't find the electric town because I got off on the different railway line. So yeah, get a good map.
What food did you have? You mentioned the conveyor belt restaurant.
I had a conveyor belt restaurant. We also found a really nice, it was interesting, a katsujin place, a katsu shop, really quite posh restaurant. We thought, you know, it was going to be just katsu curry and stuff, but it was actually really, really nice tempura with lots of different sauces and
tempura, which is Portuguese.
Tempura. Is it?
Yep. Japanese.
It's also delicious.
Japanese it borrowed is. It.
It is delicious. And lot, yeah, different sauces and a big bowl of, you know, obviously a big bowl of diced cabbage with dressings, all that sort of stuff. What else? What else did we have? I'm trying to remember.
Did you go to an Azakaya bar?
No, I couldn't. I wanted to, but
because you kind of had kids.
Yeah, so. As a kid, I couldn't really go into one. When I went to Akihabara in the evening by myself, there was a 6-story building, and it was really funny because every story was a different eating place, and because it was night, the light they were lit up from inside, you could see inside, and like floor one was an Irish tavern. And floor two was yakitori or something of the sort. It was really quite funny standing there and looking up at the building and realizing, everyone felt that on a different floor.
That's one of the cool things about Tokyo. One of the many cool things about Tokyo is that you'll have a tall building and every floor will have some form of entertainment. It's not like in New Zealand where the highest you'll go is first floor or a basement. Like in Japan, people will go up, you know, 10 flights or even higher for a restaurant.
But the basement food courts are pretty fucking valuable.
They are. They're very nice. And the Akihabara stores were freaky. Got more and more freaky the higher you went up. You know, so the bottom floor would be Gundam and Hello Kitty. And then the 6th floor would be naked sports girls models. You know, little, what do you call them? I don't even know what you would call them, but... Yeah, and then the 7th floor would be nothing but BB guns and guys dressed in army camos.
Awesome. Sounds like some kind of weird futuristic thing. Or perhaps some sort of sexual dream.
Yeah, it was very, very weird. I was surprised the camo, the guys in camo and like videos showing people using their guns and Call of Duty on the screen and all these different guns was sort of higher than the porn. Hmm. I don't know if that was the right decision.
You reckon?
I'm not sure. I just can't work it out still.
You think war toys are more family-friendly than sex?
I suppose so. So what are you saying? Once you get to the porn, you turn around and go down because you know you're going to hit the guns soon.
Yeah.
So you take the kids away.
My favourite example of that kind of building where each floor had, you know, new and wonderful things was amazingly enough in Hiroshima, which is not what I expected of that city. And I knew when we hit the kind of Victorian women's wear store with, you know, all lacy and bustles and, you know, floor length and kind of morning wear. I don't mean morning. I mean morning with a U. Like,
yeah.
Like black, beautiful black dresses, just astonishing fabric and, you know, house deposit prices. I knew that we were in for an absolute treat, and it was the best shopping building I've ever seen anywhere in the world in my life. In Hiroshima. Yes. Why there of all places? Because why not there?
There probably was one in Tokyo as well.
There somewhere. May well have been. May have been somewhere. The exact same layout.
Tokyo Hands was great. Tokyo Hands.
Yep.
Was great. Yep. A craft store. But, you know, I'm used to Spotlight where it's just fabrics and knitting.
Yeah.
There was one floor of fabrics and knitting, but then there was a whole floor of model trains and a whole floor of Gundam and a floor of kind of Dremel tools and science kits. Great. It's fantastic.
I'm just looking up if something even still exists after the earthquake. When, oh my God. Wow, if you search for Sushi Dai on Google, I'm the third result.
Sushi Dai was recommended. We didn't get to the
I don't know if it still exists, man. I'm not sure if it's still there. Because I know that the fish market's being moved this year, and I'm not sure if it's already happened. If it has been moved, then Sushi Dai may not exist anymore.
Why are they moving it? Because of the tsunami threat?
No, it was the decision was made long before the tsunami happened. I don't know if it was a tsunami threat or if it was just because the property was too valuable to dedicate so much of it to a fish market and
because I read that the fish market was kind of mandated by law to stop profiteering from wholesalers.
Right. Well, I don't know if that's true or not, but it was being moved. It wasn't being you know.
Yeah, I don't know if the location probably not mandated, but yeah. Now, interesting. Tokyo, we've probably bored everyone who doesn't care about Japan out of their brains.
And I've hardly said a damn word the whole episode. So just you remember when you're thinking, man, that episode was boring. Just remember, I hardly spoke. And just see if you can figure out what the relationship is there.
So go to Japan, fuckers.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Great. The question that you started to ask, well, that you did ask, was if people see Japanese seats on grabber seat. What should they do? I say, just get the seats.
Yep.
Do it. Absolutely.
It's not scary.
Do it.
We were quite scared, but it's easy.
Yeah,
you don't
need
any Japanese. It's nice to have.
I told
nice
you.
Nice to have hello, goodbye, thank you, and excuse me, but you don't have to.
I told you that before you went. You didn't need to be afraid because you could have listened to your Uncle Morgan, who would never give you bad advice.
I wasn't afraid. Mainly taking kids was what bothered me, but even then, take kids. They love kids.
This is my Japanese scary story. I was a bit pissed. I was at a train station. I'd accidentally gone through without any money on my card, and I didn't have enough money to get out of the station that I'd gone to. And I was standing there, and I didn't. And the thing was beeping at me, and I was like, And all these people who were just passing were like, "Okay, you need press the button." They weren't actually speaking to me in English. But they were like, you press the button, and then the conductor came, and he didn't speak any English, but I just went, my card doesn't work. And he let me through, and I put money on the card, and everything was happy. And I think if I could deal with that and an earthquake, then, you know, I can deal with just sightseeing. So you can too.
Yep, similar story. My 65-year-old mother-in-law was flustered and jammed her Suica card into the ticket reader, so it sucked it in. And she was all worried and stuff. And the guy came running over and he was apologizing nonstop as he got her card out of the machine because he'd obviously realized that it was his mistake for some reason.
Now, obviously, most of the time you used Suica cards, but did you ever use one of the magnetic tickets?
Yeah, for the magnetic.
How friggin' brilliant are those things?
That's so awesome.
Oh, my God!
when you watch the regular people using them, they are putting them, you realize that people are putting them in before their person's got their card at the other end.
Yeah. So fast.
So quick.
So fast. Now, why can't we have the same mechanism? It doesn't matter if we have lower volumes. Let's have the same mechanism. Let's stop messing around.
They must be cheap because there's so many of them.
Let's start building a goddamn subway network and let's do it right. Just do what the Japanese do, because that, honestly, is right. It's the right way to do it.
Because it's not going to return enough money.
And the friggin' Mercer to wherever the shit Holiday Highway, it's going to be brilliant, isn't it?
Doesn't everyone have cars? Why would you want?
Isn't the predictability of this incredible? Where you know, Steve and Joyce said, no, we'll review that plan for your CBD railway tunnel and we'll come back to you and let you know.
Yeah.
And of course they come back and say, oh, nah.
Get fucked, Stephen. Your days are numbered, motherfucker. Now, unfortunately, that number is like over 1,000. But once your number comes up, you'll be up against the wall, you prick.
So they've taken the business model and said it will cost the same, but the returns are nowhere near what you're saying they're going to be.
Utter bloody tripe. For one thing, the number of cars that they're estimating are going to be in Auckland City in 2040, they are so wrong, because peak oil, bitches. Look it up. Peak oil says no.
Like when oil's 4 times, 10 times the price in real terms.
Lots of bicycles and an electric rail system. But our electric rail system won't be finished because National are pig fuckers.
Because the trains will keep stopping at Britomart and having to back out again.
Oh my, and that is retarded. Going into Newmarket and then reversing into the station, taking who knows how long. Can you imagine doing anything so stupid in Japan?
They would probably laugh their heads off. Although I have to say that it was one of the most confusing trains for me, was a train that stopped halfway because it arrived on the wrong side of the platform. And we were all looking at each other going, what? What? It came the wrong way. Because, you know, the trains on the left go forward. But yep. Then it was right because it left out the opposite way.
Yep.
Very strange.
Oh, like at the end of the line.
No, it wasn't. It was halfway down the line. But this particular train got to that station and then went back again. So it entered the station on the wrong side of the platform.
Oh, the tighter express does that.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. I'm just not used to it.
You know what else? You know what else they'd laugh at?
It is like, what? It does kind of mess with your head a bit.
I spent 2 days working out that as long as you got the platform you wanted, it was like the left-hand side of the road. You got on that train, it went the way that you thought it would go.
Listeners, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I'm going to be quiet again for a little while and let these windbags talk this out of their fucking systems.
We need a friggin'.
I'm going to put a mark
the point, that
on
point
the recording and fast forward.
Surely at one point Japan had one train line, Tokyo had one train line.
Kyoto, with the same size population as Auckland, has two subway lines, different density, but same population, same number of taxpayers.
Auckland needs to be denser.
And you can also, shut up, you're dense. You can also watch the Tokyo subway network evolve. There's a flash on an animated GIF watching the lines and loops.
Clean
the bath. Yep. That's what you clean your shower with.
No, GIF is the correct pronunciation for
GIF.
No, GIF.
Graphics interface.
Yep. Look it up, bitches. Correct pronunciation of GIF, G-I-F. Look it up and then suck my dick.
It's a GIF and a gay pig.
A gay pig, like pegging. I think pegging might have been a word of the week before, was it?
It's when a lady makes love to a man's bottom with a strap on.
Right.
It's a gay pig, is it?
Did you look up GIF yet, bitches?
I'm not even going to bother.
It cleans and shines without harsh scratching. Is that what you want me to look at?
G-I-F. GIF.
G-I-F.
GIF. Good. God damn. So we're not getting a rail tunnel because Stephen says no.
Dick.
Maybe we should vote him out. Is Morgan gone?
No, I'm just wondering if I should read this quote.
About GIF.
Yep. CompuServe used to distribute a graphics display program called CompuShow. In the documentation for version 8.33 and the facts section, it states the GIF graphics interchange format, pronounced GIF, J-I-F, was designed by CompuServe and the official specification released in June of 1987. Now, motherfuckers, trying to correct me. This is like LL all over again. You fucking bitches.
All right. That's bullshit.
Nope. I'm just going to edit the Wikipedia page to say that it's pronounced.
You can edit whatever you like. On the GIF pronunciation page at altonhome.com/GIF, you cannot edit. So sucked in. Deal with it.
This is what the Wikipedia entry says. The creators of the format pronounced GIF with a soft G as in gin. Jeff. Oh, wait, that's what you said.
That is exactly
what I did. I looked at Jen and went, oh, it's the
but
same.
But they said, then say, and since then everyone has corrected them to pronounce it correctly.
It says that actually. It
I
says
say that the creators can decide. I think it's up to the creators. Yep. Like the wrong pronunciation uses a hard G. That's right. That's correct. Anyway, moving on. Another thing that the Japanese would laugh at would be just the fucking shoddy work that we do on what little rail network we've got. If you listen to a train going past, ka-clunker, ka-clunker, ka-clunker. There's no excuse for that. That is crappy spacing between the rails. I'm not a train spotter, but that's what I am imagining. And the filthy fucking smoke and the big, dirty, belching diesel engines. And
I walked through Britomart Station this weekend, actually, to drop someone off, and it stinks to high heaven of diesel.
So, Britomart, that would be an underground rail station serviced exclusively by diesel engine trains. Is that right? Underground diesel engines. Yeah. Fucking geniuses.
What we need is nuclear trains, Morgan.
Just like
nuclear subway stations.
Nuclear submarines. Nuclear trains would be so good. Can you imagine how efficient that would be?
Do you remember there was a disaster movie called The Big Bus that was about a nuclear-powered bus? No. I'm just going to Google it to make sure I didn't hallucinate it.
This is a terrible show.
Yeah, I'm going to make it worse.
God.
It's a show about us searching the web.
While you are, I'm letting you guys have all the rope you can get to strangle yourselves. While you're looking that up, I'm going to talk about Mark Zuckerberg's new challenge, which is eating only what he kills.
What?
He doesn't eat meat from animals that other people slaughtered. And he's so far he's killed a pig and a goat and chickens.
Does he butcher them or does he just slaughter them?
He slaughters them.
And then get someone else to butcher them.
I think you probably get someone else to butcher them because that's quite specialised. And so mainly this means that he's not eating very much meat.
That's real hard work.
I'm sorry?
That's the hard work.
I think morally, I mean, you know, emotionally, it's the much harder work is the killing. In terms of skill, the butchering is probably a bit further up there. Of course, you need to be skillful to dispatch an animal very, you know, quickly and cleanly and as painlessly as you can. But I think that's probably an easier skill to learn than chopping a steak out, getting rid of the guts without spilling them.
11, we went to a school camp to this place called Totra Springs, which is a Christian camp near Morrinsville, I think, somewhere up yonder in the Waikato. And the day we arrived, they'd just done their annual slaughter of their cows, and we couldn't use the main dining hall because they were using that to butcher all the cows.
Yeah, nice.
And I remember walking past and seeing a bunch of guys wearing like overalls and gumboots just surrounded by all this blood and dismembered cow bits.
Yeah.
And it didn't occur to me to be horrified or anything. I was just like, oh yeah, there are the cows being cut up. Christians.
Mm. Well, it's not just Christians. When's the last time you had a burger? What do you think that was made of?
I actually can't remember. But yeah.
Can you buy Christian burgers?
Probably. You could in ancient Rome.
Probably a veggie burger from Burger Fuel.
Tenderized by lions. what's the one with the chips in it? With the Doritos in it? That with the cumin chickpea patty instead of a beef patty. Oh, it's a good burger. Oh, it's a good burger.
That sounds good.
High compression air pumped into truck driver's body, man becomes a, quote, human balloon. An Opotiki truck driver, this is in New Zealand, says he felt like a human balloon when compressed air was forced into his body after he fell onto a brass fitting on Saturday. This was, I guess, like the 21st of May or something. Now, when I first heard this, it sounded like he was playing with an air compressor and his asshole, and it accidentally went off in a bad way, which I understand is a sexual game that they play somewhere like the Philippines with bicycle pumps. They pump up their colons with air and then, you know, release it out with a huge fart. And apparently it's quite a satisfying feeling. But
there is a sort of subset of gay men who do that. It's part of that sort of beer culture, that the larger man, and they will pump their intestines full of air, and it makes their belly stick out.
Yeah.
And you can Google it. You'll find pictures of hairy, naked men with distended bellies and other guys going, oh, my God, that's so hot.
Yeah. But instead, what happened with this guy is that he fell over and fell onto this brass nipple, and it didn't go into his asshole. It went through the skin of his butt cheek. and then the air compressor at something like 100 PSI went off and pumped air between his skin and his muscle and inflated the skin off his body and separated the fat from the muscle. He thought that he was going to die. And I think if his mates hadn't come and somehow unhooked him, he probably would. He's described his skin feeling like a pork roast, crackling on the outside and soft underneath.
Nasty.
Yeah, really nasty. I felt the air rush into my body, and I felt like it was going to explode from my foot. I was blowing up like a football. It felt like I had the bends, like in diving. I had no choice but just to lay there, blowing up like a balloon. Doctors later told him that the air separated fat from muscle, and they were surprised it did not break his skin.
That would have been quite a horrible event.
Of course, someone does do the classic joke and say it was a million to one freak accident, which I think was on Seinfeld. That was the joke. If, you know, a man came into the accident emergency with a shampoo bottle up his ass, he'd always say it was a million to one freak accident. Oopsie, something went up my ass. Terribly sorry.
I've just Googled it, and when a person puts air up their bum for pleasure, it's called an air enema.
Right.
That makes sense.
God, I can imagine it being kind of satisfying, but it seems extremely dangerous. I wouldn't do it.
No, basically. Yeah, I remember hearing horror stories about air compressors in general, even with, you know, broken skin and causing, what do you call them?
Embolisms?
Is it an infarction when you get an air bubble in your veins?
It's an embolism.
Embolism, that's the one.
Yeah. Myocardial infarction is just another word for a heart attack.
Right.
All right, bitches, what's next? Sorry, I've got to stop calling you bitches, but you were bitches before for a little while. I'm sorry. I'm sorry to tell you.
Tupac Shakur?
Yes, Robin, this is on your list. What's that about?
Oh, so Tupac's actually alive, and he's been living in New Zealand in an undisclosed location.
Wow, Harry him and Elvis. Is it?
Undisclosed, because if it was made public, then Pete Vrim would go there. And he's also there with the notorious B.I.G. Biggie Smalls.
Yeah.
Maybe he's in Hooker Lodge because he thought there were hookers there.
I already made that joke, kind of.
Or the what is it? The Eagle's Nest, that other posh place up north.
The what?
I don't know.
It's called the Eagle's Nest.
Yeah, that's Hitler's place. Sorry,
that was a kind of chest hair pattern.
I don't know. Is it true or not?
What, I read that article. Hang on, I'm going to have to actually.
I've been mean, Ben. I actually put this. If you'll notice in the show rundown, everything with a question mark in front of it is something that I put in someone else's name.
I understand. I was also being mean by putting Robin on the spot.
Yeah, and I approve. This is actually the PBS website was hacked, fake articles were added. And I'm sure Robin will come back with the details any second.
Yep. So the PBS website was hacked. And it was a group. Hang on. They had a funny name. They called Lulz Sec or the Lulz Boat.
I love hackers.
Lulz, exciting and new. Come aboard. We're DDoSing you.
But I would like to see this turn into
the Lulz boat. Soon we'll be making another tour. The Lulz boat.
We should get Matthew on to talk about Tupac conspiracy theories. because I'm sure this is fueling someone's fire. The group is not affiliated with Anonymous.
Is anyone?
I don't know. They put some fake articles on in.
I bet they're affiliated with Cameron Slater. Isn't everyone?
I'm not affiliated with Cameron Slater.
Oh, sorry, everyone evil?
So they're about to declare, well, they've kind of already declared war on MMP. These right-wing motherfuckers, these fucking toe rags that hate democracy.
It's been horribly telegraphed. Do you think they've telegraphed it themselves?
Absolutely. I don't think anything's happening by accident.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I wonder if the telegraphing is actually their way of just testing things out, testing the waters without putting their heads above the ramparts. I actually have a feeling that once... what's better for democracy in New Zealand? First past the post, which I think, frankly, was a disaster and meant that a lot of people weren't represented in Parliament at all. Or MMP, which maybe has faults, but means that everyone actually is represented. I mean, which is better for democracy? It's very easy. I think it's a fucking simple decision. Now maybe you could make an argument for, you know, single transferable vote or, you know, one of the other...
Supplementary member or whatever. Yep. Yeah.
Or, you know, one of the ranking systems. But I think that these guys want us to go back to first past the post.
Or a part first past the post, at least. And, yeah.
And it would be terrible.
I think someone put it really well. I think it was Kerry Hanare on Twitter or someone like that who said that why would you want to go to a system that reduced the Gallagher... We talked about the Gallagher Index early on.
Yeah.
And basically it's a reflection of how far away from what the voting public want the actual representation is.
Yeah.
And New Zealand is one of the best represented on that index.
And that's because of proportional representation.
Exactly. So the only things that skew it a little bit are Maori seats and very low polling parties who, you know, poll 2% or 1% and don't get a seat.
Right.
Which I think is good. You know, you don't want...
Well, you could even... You could make an argument that 5% maybe the threshold is wrong.
Too high, you think?
Oh, yeah, but I don't know if going down to 2% would be a good idea. Maybe 4%, but 5% seems actually maybe it's just the, you know, balance.
I think it's okay. I mean, I think, you know, like they say, 5%, or if you get a
the trouble is
literally MP,
and that's right. And I think that's where the problem comes, because you get the Greens with, you know, who knows what they'll get at the election? Probably somewhere between 7 and 11% party vote at the election, and
if
they'll
you're lucky,
get
if you're lucky.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. Actually.
I'd like them to, but, you know, they polled at 10% last time and got 4 and a bit.
That's not the only good thing
with First Past the Post were all the joke parties, specifically McGillicuddy Serious. Because,
Bill and Ben.
I think I'm pretty sure we talked about this before, but I was in the Hamilton East. I was in the Waikato electorate, and Waikato was always national, always rural and farming. But there's this little corner of Hamilton that was part of Waikato. And so you'd have the McGillicuddy candidate to vote for, and it's just like, yeah.
So there's no point in voting for anyone else.
You're never going to get elected.
Yeah.
I don't want to return to that. But what do you think about other proportional systems like STV?
STV is where you rank people, right?
Yeah.
I still don't quite get it.
Ben?
And if I don't quite get it, then what's the hope?
Well, you're a bit thick, frankly.
I mean, I haven't had it explained to me properly.
Let me just clarify one thing so we don't have to do a correction next week. Green Party did not get 4-point-something%, or they would have no one in the House, you mental case. They got...
No. Yeah,
they would have no one in the House. They didn't get any electorate seats. So why are they
represented? Coromandel?
No, they haven't had Coromandel for, I think, 2 elections.
Okay,
And Jeanette Fitzsimons isn't even in the Green Party anymore. And she is the one that used to win it, you know, ages ago. They've got nine...
They only do it because Labor would back down from Coromandel.
Right. They're just below 7% at the last general election.
Fair enough.
ACT, though, ACT with their 3.6% at the last general election, which is obviously way below the threshold, and because of Rodney Hyde in one electorate in Auckland, have 5 members. So, I mean, there is definitely a problem, I think, with dragging in people on an electorate seat from the list. Frankly, I think that's the part that shouldn't happen. I think if you're in on the electorate, your percentage maybe shouldn't get counted.
Yeah, I'm just here we go. New Zealand First. Remember old New Zealand First? After the 1996 election, they had 17 seats, which seems incredible.
Yeah.
And I don't remember it being that much, but somehow Winston just did his magical thing and they had 17 seats.
Yeah. That's incredible.
And that's MMP. That was after the first MMP election. I think the weird thing is there are fewer of those smaller parties. There's kind of Greens on the left, ACT on the right.
I think so. Didn't someone say that?
That's not true at all.
Is it historical that every minor party that has been part of government has kind of self-destructed? ACT, Maori Party. Well, the Maori Party were part of government prior, weren't they?
Yes.
No, they haven't been.
Progressives. Progressives haven't self-destructed.
Green hasn't. And Green started out as the Values Party in the 70s. Jeanette was part of that. But yeah, there have been all those like ones that were part of the Alliance, Mana Motuhake.
Yeah.
Sports and Recreation.
Christian Coalition.
Yeah. Now the thing about the threshold that gets my goat, it's still talking about ACT. ACT with 3.6% of the party vote, 5 seats. New Zealand First with 4% of the party vote.
No seats. And yet they're campaigning for change. Surely they'd be happy to keep it the way it was.
It seems very strange to me.
Is it purely national supporters that are really wanting change?
I think that they're doing
anything they can to get an absolute majority next time.
I think that's right. And to return to what was considered by many, they seemed to be the default party, right? Every now and then we tried out Labour for a while, but National was the real government. Which is how it felt under
the natural government.
Yeah, that's right. The natural government. That's sort of how it felt under first past the post. I understand. I mean, I was a bit young for most of that. I think MMP though, you know, it changes around because the desires of the electorate change.
But everyone wants National, Morgan. Everyone. 53% of the country want National. 60-odd% want John Key.
They want, I think, what our press tell them to want. I think our media have been doing us a terrible disservice.
But apparently, is it something like 65% don't want asset sales?
Right, that sounds right. I'm surprised it's that low. I think if it was explained better by our shithouse New Zealand media, it would be an even higher number. Because if they understood how much we earn from keeping those assets in our hands, you know, every single year versus the single little cash infusion we'd get for selling them, they'd understand that it is just nonsensical. Absolutely nonsensical. It's tricky, though.
I'm not paying for something that I already own.
I'm not entirely following you.
Oh, you know they say if it goes public, then New Zealand mum and dad share, investors can buy shares.
Yeah, great. Mm. That'd be wonderful. No, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
We already are shareholders. We're 100% shareholders. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. I think there's a weird way of putting it, Robin.
So I was just finding some evidence for that. Second poll finds lack of public support for New Zealand asset sales from 27th of May.
Let me guess. It wasn't Courier who found this. It was Courier who found that National were 60% whatever, preferred Prime Minister and so on.
This is Horizon poll. Right. Said 51.9% of respondents would not give a mandate to go ahead with sales.
Yep.
18.2% undecided.
Yep.
Yeah, that sort of area. But John Key preferred Prime Minister by 67%.
Yeah, well, look at the alternative.
Yeah, this is true. I think that's partly why Labour is polling so low.
Labour are hurting New Zealand by holding on to that idiot.
Yeah.
Frankly.
I mean, he's not an idiot, but...
He's useless.
He is useless.
He's a floppy.
But when you talk about the media, front page of the Herald today, a picture of a family snap of John Key
planker,
with his son
planking. Complete and utter fucking planker.
I mean, it's like a picture of me having a barbecue with my dad. You know, it's not news. It's just like, it's not front page news, at least.
That's right. It's not news. It's definitely not news. And that's what the Herald is giving us. The Herald is the biggest paper in New Zealand, right?
Yes.
And that's what they give us. Bloody disappointing. I think it's time we smash all this shit apart and build our own new media. But how do we do that? How do we do that?
Better job than what we're doing then.
Hey, I've given you a free hand this episode right up until not very long ago.
How are we going for time?
Oh, who knows? there was all that rubbish, all the failed connection stuff, and so who knows what the connections are. So anyway, the warm place in my heart that houses the Green Party is becoming a little bit cooler after we look at the Auckland representation on their list, because I mean, frankly, I mean, there's a chance they'll get an electorate, Coromandel maybe, but probably they're more likely just to get in from the party vote. And if you look, like in their top 11 or something, there's one Aucklander. In the top 10, there's one Aucklander, something like that. It's absolutely outrageous. I don't know what they think they're doing. Where, I mean, Auckland is by far the largest, I mean, it's the largest population centre, obviously, by just a ridiculously huge amount. I mean, is it half the population yet? Is it over 2 million?
Almost.
A good third.
I think it's way more than a third. Surely. It must be heading for 2 million. And
why isn't Gareth Hughes filled out the list?
And he's not an Aucklander. Well, he's moved up four places. He was 11th, I think, and now he's 7th, something like that.
Oh, that's good.
But frankly, he should be the leader. And they should give up with this stupid co-leader bullshit. Have a leader. What's this? Oh, we need male and female representation.
They have a male and a female co-leader.
Yeah, I know what they're doing, but it's stupid.
Hippies.
They are hippies. I don't want hippies. I want leaders. I want people with vision. And some of them have demonstrated, you know, a certain amount of vision, being in favour of public transport.
Can I give you a population of Auckland?
Yeah.
Is
it about 1.8 million?
Urban area at 1.3.
That's small. I thought it was way more than 1.3.
Well,
what are you counting? Is that inside the new Auckland? Or are you talking about some central agglomeration?
Metropolitan area.
Yeah.
This is just some shit that's on Wikipedia.
That doesn't seem like it's nearly enough. I wonder what that is actually counting. Does it give you a map?
No. It just says Tamaki Makaurau.
Auckland, party time, excellent. this is from 2002. That's great, aucklandcity.govt.nz. Thanks a fucking lot. Well, let's see what they had to say in 2002. Oh, this is going to be useless. It's just going to be the old Auckland City, isn't it? It's going to be like 400,000. I care, motherfucker. I'm having a competition with Wellington, if you didn't know.
We've got so many more people. Can I even speak? We have so many more people in Wellington, it's just not silly.
Hang on. The greater Auckland region.
Yeah.
2010 estimate 1.4.
The great Auckland region.
It is great. Auckland is greater. It's the greatest region. Wow. So even that is only 1.4 million.
It's the greater super region.
That's way less than I expected. 1.4 million.
It's because we haven't had a census because of Auckland, because of Christchurch.
Fucking Christchurch.
I hate Christchurch with the earthquakes ruining everyone.
Ruining the census.
What's Christchurch ever done for us anyway? Look what they're being used as an excuse for.
What is the story with the Christchurch though? Is it they're saying it's not going to be open for a year?
Yeah. Yeah, because of that bloody building. Well, they're not saying the CBD isn't going to be open for a year, but they're saying it's going to take a year to dismantle that. What's the big hotel?
Grand Chancellor.
It's going to take a year to dismantle the Grand Chancellor because they're afraid to use explosives. Apparently it's actually illegal to demolish buildings with explosives in New Zealand. But I say we should get some of those Las Vegas guys down here, fly them down for a bloody long weekend, because I expect that's as long as it would take them. Get them to implode it and everything else on that block, and then we'll be done in a month. Get some guys with big trucks and bloody clean it out and open up the fucking city for redevelopment. Because what we're doing right now is ridiculous. They're killing Christchurch by being so slow.
Yeah, that's what. Did you see any of the TED talks at the Christchurch TEDx?
No, I didn't go.
I saw one. It was a former mayor of San Francisco, and they had a pretty big earthquake there a couple of decades ago.
In the late 80s, I remember a big one.
The one thing that people do is if people wanted to go into their earthquake damaged buildings, they would say, okay, you sign this thing that says you take full responsibility for it, and we'll let you go in there for like 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And you can just take whatever you can carry.
Yeah.
But that's, as long as you're allowed to do it. And there are so many people in Christchurch who want to do that.
Yeah.
And, chances are their building isn't going to collapse. And, they maybe just want to get a copy of their wedding photo or their will or something like that.
Yeah.
It's weird. It's really strange that they're taking so long to do this stuff. I mean, I would have thought that there would be a real incentive to be very speedy about the demolition and the rebuilding, but they're really dragging their feet.
Oh, I was just going to see if Leighton was on Skype, but he's not on, because I bet he had joined me in shouting at them.
He's getting pretty shouty on Twitter.
He's bloody right. It is outrageous what's happening. And I think it's another symptom of New Zealand being a bit friggin' half-assed. I don't understand what's going on. Oh, my God, New Zealand. We're supposed to be good.
Risk aversion is what it is.
And right, even, but we've got to embrace risk.
You've even got people on the right complaining about National being too risk-averse.
Right.
And too careful with what they're doing. They, you know, luckily, they're holding back a bit. But, yeah.
So let me tell you the green list here, just in terms of where they're from. This is the top 12: Dunedin, Wellington, West Coast, Coromandel, Christchurch, Wellington, Auckland, Wellington, Blenheim, Auckland, Wellington. The Auckland representation, first person is in at 8. Are they even going to get 8 people in? Are they even going to get 8?
Who knows?
So I think this is ridiculous. This is ridiculous.
Are all the hippies being chased out of Grey Lynn?
They're long gone. They're replaced by incredibly boring assholes. Yeah. Those suburbs are very, very dull now, frankly. Really, really nice cars, but dull.
I think I read somewhere that both the National and Labour candidates for Auckland Central can't afford to buy a house in Auckland Central. Well, there is. They can't afford to buy a house. They could afford an apartment, but they don't do apartments.
I'd highly doubt it. Highly doubt they could buy it. I'm so glad we stretched to get a house when we did, because, by God, we couldn't afford one now.
Yeah, it's tough, eh? But frankly, I love the apartment I'm in. So, you know, whatever. It's all good. Do what you like. But I would rather own it than rent it.
Because you could put holes in the wall.
Would I want to put holes in the walls? I don't know if I'd want to put holes in the walls. I could find a way to shut up the vent fan on the guest bathroom. That's for sure. That thing is annoying. When the wind is exactly right, it does this thing. It spins.
It gets spun by the wind.
Yeah.
Why don't you just jam a piece of paper or something in it?
I don't know how to do that. I think I'd have to go up into the ceiling to do that.
Oh, is it at the end of a hose?
It's not just straight through the wall. It goes up through a vent through the ceiling and then along a hose and then out the wall. Anyway, all that's boring. You know what's not boring? You know what is horrifying and
what's
predictable?
Really interesting, Morgan?
This is from Boing Boing. Tapes show Italian priest lured teenage boys for sex, paid them with cocaine. Hey! The Catholic Church is really one-upping itself here.
That's...
All right, listen, here's a quote from the tapes. This guy's name, Father Ricardo Sepia.
Two wrongs make a right.
Quote, I do not want 16-year-old boys, but younger. 14-year-olds are okay. Look for needy boys who have family issues. Oh, that's a direct quote recorded on tape from this motherfucker. Can we just do away with this whole thing now?
Is he the guy who was on the Vatican committee against pedophilia?
Oh, God, I'm not sure about that, but it sounds like it's probably right. But he is a priest in the Archdiocese of one of the top advisors working with the Pope, and that advisor is working on reforms to respond to prior scandals of paedophile priests.
Okay, that's probably what I was thinking of.
Yeah, so it's a little bit more circuitous than this guy himself is on, you know, some committee, but it's not too far away. What are these guys doing? What are they doing? What are they doing?
It's because they're not allowed to have sex, so they go mental.
Well, I don't think that you have sex with children because you're not allowed to have sex. I think you have sex with children because you're sexually attracted to children. And I think that there's something structurally in the church which makes people attracted. Or is what you're saying, they're not allowed to have sex, so that attracts them in thinking that this will allow, you know, this will help them control their urges. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Well, or they think, you know, you're not allowed to have sex with a woman, so if you have sex with a boy, then it doesn't count.
No, that's you're way offline.
No way
is that right.
And you do abstain for the first 10 or 15 years of your, you know, sexual life. Does that cause you to become a bit stupid in the head?
No. Do it up the bum, you won't get pregnant.
I don't think you have sex with children because you can't have sex with women. You have sex with children because you are sexually attracted to children.
Or because
Well, because, you know, if you, like diet. I'm saying, as a young priest, you're, you know, happy and dedicated and don't look at any images of women and keep yourself celibate for a long time. And the only people you see are young boys, altar boys, and that sort of thing. Then...
Yeah, if you're frequently around altar boys and they sort of look up to you and you can manipulate them, then that's where you would go to get your rocks off.
I'm sure there's entire studies done on this.
Yeah, I don't think you do that if you don't have a predisposition to it. I think that the structure of the church is such that it attracts people who already have that disposition. I don't think that people are turned into child rapers by the church. I think that they were child rapers, and that made them attracted to the church. Being protected by the church certainly probably encouraged them even more. What a bunch of fucking idiots.
We need to do a survey and find out how many people, you know, are child rapers before they enter the church.
Yeah, I think it's probably one of those things which is hard to answer. A lot of rapes are unreported, right? So, yeah, it's very hard to answer that.
It's very, very... I mean, looking for confirmation bias as a Catholic, relapsed Catholic, how much of it is... What's the quantity?
High. Too high. Too high. Well, I don't think
more than zero is too high. But is it higher than the natural occurrence of paedophilia in society?
Seems to be.
Well, you don't hear it happening with other religions, which is the interesting thing.
No, that's right. Oh, a little bit with one of those weird little cults. I remember there was a weird little cult which encouraged. They called it something like blowing out the children. And they'd have sex with their children. It was a little New Zealand, semi-Christian cult. I can't remember what they were called. It wasn't...
Centrepoint?
Centrepoint, that's it.
Ah.
There you go. Yeah, they had sex with their children, right? Or were encouraged to or something. Yeah, by, I guess, you know, if the leader's a nutter, then he's going to make insane rulings.
Are you calling God a nutter?
I don't believe that God was the leader of the Centrepoint community.
But he's the leader of the Catholics.
So why is Centrepoint Theatre still called Centrepoint Theatre, and why is there a place called Centrepoint Fabrics?
I think they're different.
Well, they might be, but who in their right mind?
Centrepoint before this schmozzle happened.
Centrepoint was a commune in Albany, New Zealand, created in 1977 by Herbert Thomas Potter, a.k.a. Bert Potter, and 36 others. Potter was sentenced to 7 years jail after being convicted of 13 charges of indecently assaulting 5 girls between 1979 and 1984. And what were their ages? Justice Blanchard said Potter had systematically corrupted children for his own sexual pleasure and had abused the power and trust community members placed in him. Potter maintained he had done nothing wrong and that he still believed sex from the start of puberty was appropriate. 6 other male leaders, one of whom was Potter's son John, was convicted for assault on a minor, indecent assault, sexual assault on a minor, or rape of a minor. Fucking nightmare. So not only the Catholics, but the Catholics, I think, are the best example.
Horrible people. All of them.
Yep, all of them.
I'm gonna call it a night soon, but I think you had one more story there for me about Steve Ballmer's head on the block.
Now, tell me about that. It's on the block because if you look at the growth stats, Bill Gates, it's on the up all the way. And exactly at the moment of the changeover, it's flat. And then we've got Dickhead Ballmer saying developers, developers, developers. And yet, I think, frankly, as we spoke about a week or two ago, it's actually not that great an environment for developers compared to others, compared to Apple, for example. Now, you had some, pretty good... responses to my criticisms of the prices of development environments and so on, but I'd say that those criticisms are still real. You're an enterprise developer. Just because you can get a free development environment doesn't mean it's cool that to get the equivalent of Apple's one you have to pay whatever $18,000 or something.
True. I mean, I still really enjoy developing for it, but I think there's lots of people defend him, but. I'm in two minds about it because on the one hand, I hate the short-termism approach of markets and market returns.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, when you do any graph comparing Apple and Microsoft over the last 1 to 3 years, it's just stupendous, the difference.
Yeah.
Microsoft flatlined for a long, long time. And I mean, yeah, like I say, it's not like they need to be growing at 100% every year. But
They shouldn't be flatlining. They've got so many clever developers.
Oh my god!
So
sorry,
many...
I just have to interject. With this.
Is this going
to
be about Japan?
This is about Bert Potter Centrepoint. His parents' names were Fanny and Dick.
No wonder he was a screw up.
It explains everything. Back to you.
Bummer's got to go. But who's the replacement?
Yeah, who replaces him? I don't know. Bill Gates comes back.
Well, I don't want Bill Gates back either. He's got better things to do with his time. He's saving lives. And I think he should keep doing that. But Balmer is a disaster. There needs to be someone absolutely singular who can get these tens of thousands of people, working together and sort out the internal problems which are preventing, really great projects, which every now and then we see a glimpse of some of their internal projects and it is amazing. Does it ever make it to market? Yeah, fuck no. It never makes it to market.
Some of the research stuff looks incredible.
Absolutely astonishing.
A lot of money on research.
And what do we get instead? We get, they fucking ruin Excel with the ribbon. Yeah, or they ruin all of Office with, a ridiculous interface which doesn't bloody work. And you just know that somewhere in there, in one of their buildings, someone has made an amazing interface for Office, which would be wonderful, but we will never see it because of internal politics. And that needs to be solved from the top.
Agree.
All right, let's wrap this motherfucker up. It's time for the Discourse Weekly Show, Urban Dictionary Word of the Week. And now I'll play the sting.
Urban Dictionary, Word of the Week.
Yay, this thing's so good.
It needs echo.
Cowbell.
All right, I'll play it again with lots of reverb.
Okay.
Urban Dictionary, Word of the Week.
You're right, that was much better.
That was so awesome.
Does it sound like we're giving feedback without having heard it?
It's echoing in my brain.
The word, who am I going to ask it of? I'm going to ask it of Ben because I think I asked Robin last time. The word, Ben, is backdoor braggart.
Backdoor braggart. Can I get a spelling on braggart?
B-R-A-G-G-A-R-T.
Oh, okay. I was thinking O-T at the end. Backdoor braggart. So it's to do with bragging.
Someone's going to get this.
And it's a sexual partner who brags about... anal sex.
Excellent. Robin?
It's when you want to brag about something, but you don't want to be all sort of like, hey, everyone, I did this. So you just subtly brag about it. Like, oh, yeah, I went to Japan.
You are on the right track.
Oh. When you subtly brag about bum sex. Can I blend the two together? Yeah.
That is the wrong track. Not quite right. You are on the right track. Backdoor bragging is the act of expressing a false statement in order to set up the conversation to prove how fantastic the subject finds themselves. So you're on the right track.
Can you give an example?
It's tricky.
Lisa, I hate clothes shopping anymore. Since I've been working out, I can never find anything that fits because my waist is too tiny and my tits are too big. Life is so unfair. Sarah, go fuck yourself. So it's, it's about the false statement is the important part, I think. Well, that's the verb. Let's try the noun. A person who states a problem that they have with the express intention of letting everyone know how awesome they think they are, revealing their douchebaggery to all. I don't think the Japan thing was quite right. I'm sorry.
No.
It's better than the bum sex, though, which I never thought I'd say, because what's better than bum sex? Tell you what, the only thing better than that is a good inflation.
Minister of Finance.
Hey, let's play that new sting that I've just made up in my head. Open the toot bag. Did that sound really professionally produced?
It did. Because it had reverb on it.
I'm not sure if it does. All right, well, I'm not even going to read an actual tweet. I'm just going to express the roughly the opinion. I'm going to express the emotion from someone's tweet. Jake Osborne reckons the new game is lame. That's basically it.
Well, you're not the game.
Yeah, the this new not the Who Wants to Be a Millionaire game, but the whatever we decided to call it. Who Wants to Be a Winner? Yeah. Well, you know, I like the idea of having a game which you know, the audience can play and which can have a leaderboard, because the word of the week can't really have a leaderboard because it's going to be me.
I do like the leaderboard thing.
I really like the idea of having a leaderboard. So maybe our listeners can think up the way that we can have a game that the listeners can play one a week or two a week, and we can get some kind of leader thing going. We can get
they can play as play along
somehow playing. Well, maybe they play along by, you know, sending something on Twitter or submitting something on the website, or maybe we just have like two people on each week, and people who are good stay on for the following week, and then we get another competitor, or I don't even know what.
Oh, a challenger.
A challenger somehow like that. I think that would be really fun, because as we've demonstrated today, our Skype works really, really well and never has any problems.
It's the future.
It's the future until Microsoft get their hands on it. I hope that never happens. Oh, no, wait.
So you're telling me that that you're listening to feedback and you're recognizing it and you're going to implement changes?
Well, I enjoy the game, but I actually agree with them. The game didn't actually quite work right. It didn't quite work right. I enjoyed it, but it just dragged somehow. The questions were too, you know, the format, it just isn't quite right for a radio show.
Agree.
So I think that something like that is really fun, and I really enjoy having, you know, things like games on the show. But that wasn't quite it. And also, Ryan's not on every week because, you know, he's a busy dude doing all the stuff with his fiancée and so on. So, you know,
whatever. We should take a leaf out of Hamish Nandy's book and steal some of the segments from Ricky Gervais.
Yeah, like what?
Like The Rice is Right.
Rice is Right. Tell me about this. I don't know what this is.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know what you're
talking about. Someone a choice of three different dishes, and they have to tell you which one comes with rice.
Okay, so it's like dishes from menu restaurants.
Well, I always get confused between Nasi Goreng and Bami Goreng.
Yeah,
you know, one of them comes with rice.
Well, Bami Goreng, I'd call it probably Bakmi Goreng, and I'd probably call it Bakmi Goreng Ayam. Has noodles and chicken, and it's from Indonesia.
Too good. You're going to be too good. The rice is right.
Door braggart, Morgan.
I didn't say anything negative. I am exclusively, I'm a normal braggart. I'm a know-it-all asshole, which is why I'm still appalled, Robin, that you chose to listen to Ben while that fucking LL, and you said you thought he was smarter than me. I was right and he was wrong. And he said, I don't know what this is. And then I said, I do know what this is. And you were still like, well, I didn't know how to choose between you. I didn't know how to make the decision between you two guys.
See, the problem is you are so overtly accurate all the time that you come across as inaccurate.
You're lying to make friends. Any corrections? My only correction, I suggested that Arnold Schwarzenegger's penis is probably veiny as fuck and shiny and brown. Actually, no, I think that's probably still right. But I just got that. I got that image back in your head for another week. Veiny as fuck.
I also glistening.
Glistening. Oh, gorgeous. And he paints it with a roller. That's why it's so brown. It is the most tanned thing you've ever seen. It's like take Jersey Shore, make it even oranger and browner. It's like a shiny, veiny piece of mahogany. But much smaller than you expect, thanks to the steroids. So now there's a thing I would like. Oh, any corrections? Sorry.
Don't think so.
No, it's only me that needs the corrections. Because right. I'd go off half-cocked. I would like to promote a little YouTube, which is by some crappy American TV show, you know, Dateline or something. But it's interesting. It's revealing in terms of an internal comparison you can make. What would you do if you saw gay parents being berated by a waitress? And this is a setup. It's like, you know, catch a predator film crews with lots of hidden cameras. But what they've done is set them up in a restaurant, and they have a happy little family, two children and two parents. They tried two structures where they have lesbian parents, and then they have a pair of dudes as the parents. And they just see what happens if they have a waitress being really insulting to them. And they just see what happens with the with the other patrons in the diner. And I think that the major part of this video, there's a YouTube on the site, go and have a look at it. The major part of this, I think, is in Texas. huge number of people get involved, some of them telling the waitress to get out. Get out of the restaurant. You're no longer welcome here. You're the worst waitress I've ever seen. You're incredibly rude. Wow. And but they also have the same thing. They set up the same scenario, I think, in New York. In Texas, they had a response rate of something like 50% of people got involved. In New York, it was something like 10%, right? So this, the supposedly right-wing, Bible-bashing, God-fearing, gay-hating state, people actually got involved and cared. And, you know, the supposedly liberal, urban, cosmopolitan state, people just kept themselves to themselves, didn't give a shit. 10% in New York, approximately. From memory.
Maybe because New York is so used to just crazy shit happening all the time that they just block it out.
Whatever the reason is, it tells me that one place is worse than the other. You know, so whatever the reason might be, I think it is horrible, awful. And one of the things that they actually say is that Texas is one of the few states in the US where it is legal to discriminate against someone because they're gay. In most states, it's not legal to use that reason. Of course, they'll just come up with some other reason. Wrong shoes. Sorry, can't serve your type here. Wrong shoes.
Mm.
Wrong shoes. You can't wear that shirt in here, mate. You can't wear that shirt in here. What, you want pancakes? Not wearing that shirt. You better leave. But I think in New York, that's not the case. So, yeah. Anyway, watch the YouTube. It's a little bit long. It's a little bit American. But it's really interesting watching some of the other patrons who do come to the rescue. And also the one guy who high-fives the waitress. Oh my God. And then they confront him after the, you know, the completion of that scenario. They do it, you know, repeatedly many, many, many times. And he says, "Oh no, I just thought she was a good waitress." Bullshit. Bullshit. There was a microphone there as well, asshole. All right. So anyway, that's me. Anything you guys want to promote?
That's it. Do we want to bar camp? Maybe no.
Yeah, let's talk about it. As long as they agree to provide everything pursuant to my rider. I'm talking specifically about the provision of the ICE 12. If there's no ICE 12, there's no Morgan.
But bar camp is a anyone can go unconference.
Yeah.
Held in Botany.
Yeah.
On what date, Morgan? Come on.
Oh, I don't know. Oh, do you want me to look it up?
Let's look it up.
I believe the children are our future. We're going to be way out in East Auckland. Bar camp.
Okay. I was invited to the very first one, but I thought, oh, God, it's all the way out in West Auckland and East Auckland, and I can't get out there. Nah, I'm not getting the bus. It's too early.
16th of July, 2011.
Oh, that's plenty of time for everyone to get ready. There's going to be
Gareth Hughes is going to be there, your hero.
He's not my hero, but we're going to have to talk to him if we can, if he's going to hang around. There's a panel this time, which is the first year they've had this at Bar Camp, with Claire Curran, Gareth Hughes, Paul Breslin, Tim Mullins, David Farrar, evil motherfucker, Vikram Kumar, and friend of the show Lance Wiggs, who is actually the moderator of the. Is it right to call him the friend of the show? I don't know. I asked him to come back on, and he was like, "Fuck no." So I don't know. I don't know. A friend of the show is quite right.
But yeah, go there. It's free. Register. Go. Come along. It's good fun.
Yeah, it is. I had a hard time staying awake last time. That's just my conference thing, though. I think it's because of him. I have to start earlier than normal. You know, 9 a.m. God, who would be up at that time in the morning? 9 a.m.
But yeah, if all goes to plan, we'll have a discourse record during that conference.
We've been asked to do a live show there, and so you know, maybe we will. I think the chances are pretty good that we will, and based on past history, it's going to be a disaster, but slightly better than the previous one.
Yeah, we'll get better every time.
Yep, we'll get better every time, and by the time we get up to about 7 or 13, it will be really tolerable.
Really tolerable?
Really tolerable.
Shoot for the stars.
That's right.
That's the end of the show. If you would like to tell a friend, I would like it if you would. And if you wouldn't like to tell a friend, tell all your friends on Twitter because, you know, Twitter.
Yeah, we don't take email or feedback anymore. Just tweet us.
Yeah, just tweet us. We actually do take emails. Oh no, we actually got an email, and we haven't spoken about it. We got an email, and there are things. Oh, I spoke about. Oh, can we even? This is from, I'm going to mispronounce his name intentionally, John Allenson. Just listened to the latest Discourse episode. Great stuff. Not sure if Ben had seen this or not when he made the comment that Mike Crowe should do beer tastings at the end of the show, but thought it was a good coincidence that this promo started showing up on our Discovery Channel here in New Zealand. Apparently it's been going in the US for a while, another day of this video. Something to do with the Beer Masters show with...
So Sam, right?
Yeah.
New guy at Discovery. What do they have you doing?
Actually, I get to make beer.
Cleaning the tanks. Yeah, I've done that. Hot, nasty work. Good luck with
it. No, I get to roam around the whole world and find really unique ingredients and make beer with them.
That's what you do.
Yeah.
Hey, that's super. I guess we can't all be handsome and covered with filth, huh? Good luck with that. Want to get my agent on the phone?
It was nice meeting you, Mike.
Yeah, whatever.
Dirty Jobs on a special night followed by the series premiere of Brewmaster Sunday at 10, only on Discovery.
Yeah, that was Sam.
So Sam.
Oh, right? God damn it. Yeah. Don't do that again. That was Sam Collegioni or whatever from Dogfish Head, which is quite a famous brewery in the States, talking to Mike Rowe. Yeah, anyway.
Sounds cool.
Yep. Sounds very cool. This is further from John Allen Stivestorm. On Morgan's comment that a machine should assign jobs to us, that is the career trip in Futurama. I suggested that people could be assigned jobs like daytime prostitute. I think probably you get similar jobs from the career trip in Futurama. You certainly got things like delivery boy. Ladies and gentlemen, his name is not John. His name is, I'm afraid of pronouncing it wrong. Is it? Because I want to say it like Diego, but it's not spelled like Diego. It's spelled Thiago, so it's probably like Thiago.
Is this from a good friend and former workmate of mine, Thiago Almeida?
See, I knew something was going to be going on, Thiago. So sort of like Diego.
I'm glad I strung you along there because I didn't realize it was from Thiago.
Yeah. Thanks, John.
It's kind of a CH, T-C-H, Thiago.
Yeah, Thiago.
Yeah.
Done. Thank you very much once again for listening. God, I can't even, I don't even feel like we're recording. This has been such a fucking disaster. Are we actually recording? What an awful show. Who listens to this thing? Why would you listen to this thing? Robin. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Ben. Thank you. And thank you from me. Goodbye. See you next week.
Cheers. Good night.
Bye.
You're listening to the weekly show on
With course. All right. We're using that one.